We're going to go to the Kina for the Kedashim of Churban Europe, which is in the Art Scroll Kinis, either on page 390, or different prints have it different. In what is it?
384.
That's Ashkenaz, right? Ashkenaz is either 382 or 384, and Sfard is probably page 390. Is that the? So here, this is a Kina that we say for the destruction of European Jewry, which, to if you're my age, certainly older, is a very real part of life. We grew up in shuls where just about everybody, or most of the people in the shul, had a tattoo, a number on their arms. And we grew up in classes where very few people had grandparents. The idea of having a pair of grandparents was rare. In our classes, great-grandparents was like something out of science fiction, that anybody would have a great-grandparent. It was totally unheard of. And we grew up with the reality of the Holocaust. I read about it, had nightmares about it, and it was something real. Over the last 70 years since the Churban, the generation of the Kedoshim is slowly leaving us, and slowly the story of Churban Europe is becoming part of history. And despite some valiant attempts to keep it alive, undoubtedly over the next generation will take its place alongside the Crusades and the Spanish Inquisition, the expulsions, as one of the historical tragedies of Klal Yisrael, which we feel on a national level and not so much on the personal level that my generation felt it. I'd like to talk a little about the 70 years since the Churban, and an appreciation of the generation that survived, that came here, that we knew. I think it's important for us to, as important as it might be to remember the tragedies that took place, to recognize that generation as a generation of builders, a generation that changed the world, coming off the Holocaust, coming into this world, which was very foreign to them. And most of them fell, were not able to survive it, but those who did had extraordinary strength to build up the Torah that we have here in America, the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, wherever Torah is found. The tremendous change in the world is something which should obligate us, should make us unsatisfied. I often feel that my father's generation is a generation of builders. If you labeled them, you would lay them as builders, people whose lifespan built. And that my generation is a generation of consumers. Basically, we've learned that Jewish people could be good consumers as well. And it's something of a come down, of a frightening idea in the difference between the generation that they had and what we had. The idea of what they came to and what they built and what they had is something which is very hard to give over in a general way. To say that they came to nothing is a statement, the statement that there was nothing here among the Yidden. Recently, David Shurin was kind enough to invite me to the house of his father, who, Oliver Shalom, who passed away, and left a very impressive library of Sfarim, mostly Sfarim. I happened to be reading from a book, and the book is written by somebody who came to this country from Europe and writes about the shame that he found here, the things that he found here, the sadness that he found here, the confusion that he found here. And there are a number of stories, two of which I wanted to share with you. One is in a chapter entitled A New Tisha B'Av, I guess appropriate for today. He writes about what he discovered in an American family. He writes about visiting a family, a home, a typical American Jewish home, empty of every visible sign of Judaism. No mezuzah adorns its door. No siddur, no Jewish book lies on the table. The family consists of a grandfather, grandmother, father, mother, and their children. The grandparents are immigrants. The other is a second and then third generation American. One of the children is an 8-year-old girl, a bright and lovely child, always looking into books. Something of a rarity among Americans in these days of radio and television. Imagine today. She attends public school, of course. No one thought has been given to her Jewish instruction. How can one rouse such a family to Judaism? I know from experience it's best to begin with the children. In this instance, I did what he had done with some success in others. I bought the child a gift, a book, Tales from the Bible, written in English, of course. While I was there, the girl pounced on the book and could not be torn away from it. Needless to mention how children become fascinated when they hear anything about God, how the world was created, about the flood, and so on. A few days later, I had occasion to visit the same home, and I tested the girl. Her father was present, and I asked her how far she had read in the book. She answered she was already up to Solomon's temple. I saw her father was pleased, and he too entered into the conversation. Perhaps because his business is in building and real estate, he asked her, how long did it take to build Solomon's temple? 7 years, she replied, her face shining with pleasure that she knew the right answer. The man then turned to me and asked, what's the situation with Solomon's temple? Where is it now? Is it still standing? I wonder whether in the whole world, in the whole history of the world, there has ever been anything so repulsively stupid as that question. We're used to it. We expect it from American Jews. On hearing it, I should have sprung up and rent my garments. The very walls of the house should have fallen on our heads to hide us from shame. But quite different, incomprehensibly different, was my actual reaction. I felt myself becoming cold as ice in every limb. Curious calm took possession of me. I became neither excited nor angry. My mood was beyond excitement and anger. More than anything, I felt like falling on his neck and weeping over this latter-day calamity. For in this man, the temple seemed to be destroyed again. It's not just a story. It's an example. It's really an example of what was found here in this country when my father and people like him came to this country. The second story, which I hope to find, many stories in the book, certainly a book you're allowed to read on Tisha B'Av. But the second story, which involves his experience in a shul. Give me a moment. I would give it to you in my words, but there's nothing like his words. Okay, you'll have to forgive me. I will get to the story on a different occasion. It's the story of his disappointment in the shuls in Brownsville. The so-called Orthodox shuls, and how the shuls had been really, the whole Frumkeit was demeaned, was lowered, and there was nothing to write home about. And he's talking about the middle of Brooklyn of his day. And the stories are very powerful stories. They're an example of what took place here in the United States when my father and his generation came. I mean, it's easy to understand that a lot of compromises were made. The kashrus involved trying to read the ingredients on something you bought. Chol of Yisrael was unheard of. There were yechidim who went out to farms and had Chol of Yisrael. And many of the compromises of the generation that were necessary were made to be able to build up Yiddishkeit, to be able to build up what we have here today. We who are here today grew up as products of that. We grew up in a different environment. To be sure, there's still the Jewish America out there, which is very far from Yiddishkeit. But there's Yiddishkeit. There's a place where Torah, Avodah, Yerushalayim is held dear, where the things that we do account for something, and are held chashuv, and within our own environment, we're protected. And the idea that we should still live with the compromises of that generation is something that causes me a lot of pain. That we should still live with the bidyeveds of a generation that had to attract people to Yiddishkeit, who had to go from 0 to 60, had to go from nothing to something, that in a generation like that, compromises had to be made. And that becomes the focus of Jewish life in the United States of America and remains that way, is something that saddens me very much. We could do better. We could do better in our areas of Shmiras HaMitzvahs. We could do better in our area, in areas of our davening. We could do better in on the focus in our learning. We could do more. We could do better. Eretz Yisrael, the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, never saw themselves as survivors of the Holocaust. They saw themselves as a continuation of Europe, of European Jewry, which moved up to come to Eretz Yisrael, to Bederech Aliyah. The idea of learning full time, of learning at all costs, it's a way of life there. Not everyone is up to it. Can't be expected of everyone, but it's a norm. It's something which people live, and people live happily, and people are willing to sacrifice for all of these things. And here in the United States, in Brooklyn, we weren't a product of the Holocaust that saw ourselves as stepping up, as they did in Eretz Yisrael, but rather as trying to create something happen. That idea of trying to make something happen was the great success of the generation of the Holocaust, the survivors of the Holocaust, who came here literally with nothing, who came here just with dreams and chalomos of what it was at home and trying to rebuild it literally from nothing. The yeshivas, the shuls were here. American Jews built shuls. The yeshivas, for the most part, the places of Torah learning, were built and inspired almost all by the survivors of the Holocaust. So, as you remember the tragedy of the Holocaust, and certainly this kina talks about the Holocaust itself, the reality check of understanding the product, what came from the Holocaust, what came from it were great, extraordinary people. Bali Madrega, we talk about individuals that are great in a generation. We're talking about a hamoinam, great numbers of people who, it's hard to understand. If we would, God forbid, go through suffering much less than that, our Yiddishkeit would be in danger. And here, with everything they went to come to a country that has nothing and to build from it, that's the extraordinary experience of the survivors of the Holocaust. Today's Tisha B'Av. Today we remember the tragedies that befell them. And this kina does so in a very powerful lashon, very powerful language. Just that itself, the cries and the screaming locked in cattle cars as they were transported. The story of the cattle cars is itself a horrible story of starvation, of suffering, of cruelty. It was overshadowed by the story of the gas chambers. But just that by itself is a horror. Katzayn la'tevach yuvol l'sreifa b'kavshaynim. It's hard for us to comprehend that humanity could live in such a way in the 20th century, and that such things could happen as they happen. As the generations go on, people deny it because it's hard to believe that such things could be. And yet they were. Again, with all the tragedies we speak about on Tisha B'Av, our comfort is knowing that we here in Brooklyn, and people in cities wherever from Yidden are found, in Chicago, in Cleveland, in Detroit, in Los Angeles, people in Europe, people in Eretz Yisrael, Yidden all over the world, sit down, we mourn together as one big family, as one family that has survived all of the oppressions, one family that has survived and stands I'm faithful to the Rabbi Nishalal. I'm fasting 24 hours, 25 hours on a hot summer day. Standing in shul and talking about our history of tragedy and bemoaning it. And we certainly hope that, as the survivors all hope, that tsar will be the tsar of the Ikvasa de Mashiach. May still be that their tsar and sorrow will be those terrible tragedies of Ikvasa de Mashiach which are foretold. And we hope that our pain, our identification with them, will give us the desire to be better people. And with that, Amitz Hashem, to bring the B.S. Gael Tzedek. After we say the Kinna, stanza by stanza, with the Chazan on the Holocaust, we will go to Elit Tziyayin Ve'Areha, which is labeled as Kinna Mem Hei, with which we end the Kinnis. For those who wish, there will be a laning of Eicha still, just before Chatzais.
Zikrono v'kayin v'kol Yisrael v'asam Yisham Habaromo.